Believe, right? The Army, she was in intelligence, we've already had a discussion about laptops and Trump and the whole thing. And, Richard, don't tear the place apart. And it's okay, just leave it on. And after 4 years in the Army, Yael got the job and is here and is, was appointed here for a year and has been extended a year, so we're delighted. She has wonderful programs about twice a month. And Israeli minorities and all kinds of Israeli community subjects which are also here in this building and free and open to the public. And if you just talk to her on your way out, she'll give you the whole rundown. Richard grew up, is from the Bronx. And,
yay!
No, you're from Queens. Don't confuse me with that. And he went to Columbia. He has 2 degrees. His master's thesis was on Milton. His love of poetry comes from his mother, who read and knew Tehillim, Psalms, and, of course, Milton, who was a Hebraist. I don't know. You sure you didn't get stuck in hell somewhere? But anyway, whatever. And so we were delighted to have these two people. They put a lot of work into this discussion this morning. And I think if we are all very good this morning, they might even do this again. So it's a, let's give them a big hand. Yay, welcome.
Well, thank you for the honor. Yael and I are very honored to be here for the second annual poetry discussion group. There are a number of themes that Yael and I will discuss today as we approach Yom Yerushalayim, which is celebrated next Wednesday, May 24th, which happens to be my birthday. Okay, this is the 50th year since the liberation and recapture of Jerusalem after the Six-Day War in 1967. Now, a major, major thing, there are a lot of things we're going to talk about, but a major thing that we will discuss is breaking down walls in our own personality. What do I mean by that? I mean that we tend to erect walls around us after we have experienced extreme pain, suffering. We erect walls when we adopt prejudices from family, from friends, from peers, and societal prejudices, so that we need to break down these walls in order to express our feelings and enter into other relationships with other people. That's what these poets are struggling with. Be it our historic enemy, our would-be love partners, or our Jewish brethren, the Mizrahim. Some of us know about the Ars Poetica, the Aris term. We will not be able to discuss it, but you have it in your booklets. That's the Kesar is her name. But we're talking about people dropping their walls of separation and getting to know other people. So that our modern dilemma is, how do we convert the other? In Hebrew, the other means acher, into an ach. It's the same aleph, chet, resh. How do you turn the other, someone who is a different color, different skin, different thought, how do you turn that person into an ach? An ach means a brother. Okay. Now, we begin with Yehuda Amichai, which we covered last year. You know, so we were here last year. We did El Malei Rachamim. He was born in Germany. He had a very long name, German name I cannot pronounce. He was born in 1924, died in Israel in 2000. He came to Palestine in 1934. My mom went to Palestine in 1932. For 2 years, she thought she was going to live there forever. I'd never be born if she'd stayed. He fought in 4 major wars, World War II, British on the British side, War of Independence, Suez Canal, Six-Day War. His works are translated into 40 different languages. Incredible. He is the most translated Hebrew poet since King David. All right, now, in background, during the course of its history, 5,000 years history of Jerusalem, It's been attacked 52 times, captured and recaptured 44 times, besieged 23 times, and it's the oldest known city that is in continuity and was settled in the 4th millennium BCE. Okay, so a little bit of background. Now, let's turn our booklet to the Amichai poem. All right, we are on page 7 in the booklet. It says, Amichai, Jerusalem, 1967. Now, Amichai is writing a poem a few months after the liberation of Jerusalem. He's writing this poem after he's celebrating Yom Kippur, which we know is the holiest Jewish day of the year. Okay, and he says here, in the interest of time, I will only do minimal Hebrew. I want to do all Hebrew, but we have so much to cover. I'm going to be very minimalistic. Okay. On the right side, it says Yom Kippur, Bishnat Tashkach Lavashti, Big Day Chag Kohim, Bahalati Leir Atika Yerushalayim. What is he saying here? Very significant. Page 8, 7 and 8. Okay. I read the first two lines in Hebrew. Now, he's saying on Yom Kippur, in the year of 5768, that's very significant because the Hebrew letters Taf, Shin, Chaf, Ket has the Hebrew word Shachach, to forget. So in the very year that Jerusalem was liberated is the year of forgetting. And that's the reason he says in English, the year of forgetting. We'd like to forget how many times the Holy Tabernacle was destroyed, how many times we've come back, and we try to forget all the suffering, but you can't. So he says, on that day, I put on my dark holiday clothes. He's coming from shul at this point. They have a break in the afternoon. You're in synagogue from 8 to 2, and then you have 3 hours break. Okay? And he walks in the old city of Jerusalem. For a long time, I stood in front of an Arab's hole-in-the-wall shop. Now, why would this man, whose family barely escaped the Holocaust, who has written so much about the blood, the loss of not just Jewish blood, but the blood of so many different nations during World War II, during the Korban, destruction of the Holocaust. Why would he go to an Arab market, all right? And the Arab market has been liberated. It is now in the hands of the Israelis. Not far from the Damascus Gate, there's a little bit of symbolism there I won't get into because it's kind of mystical. He says, a shop with buttons and zippers and spools of thread, okay, in every color and snaps and buckles. So I want to know, why is he drawn on our holiest day to go to the shuk? Shuk meaning the market. And an old Arab. And he says here, a rare light and many colors are your car. Utzva'im ravim, and then very, very significant, kamo aron hakodesh patur. In the English, he says, a rare light and many colors, like an open ark. Not just any old ark, he's talking about the holy ark that was written in the Bible, in Exodus. So he's in this old Arab market. The Arab is at the mercy of the Israelis that have taken over the old part of Jerusalem. And to Amichai, who's dressed in his finery, this common man's shop is like an ark, all the beautiful colors, like all the Torahs are laid out. He says, I told him in my heart that my father, too, had a shop like this, with thread and buttons. I explained to him in my heart about all the decades and the causes and events, why I'm here, I am now here, and my father's shop was burned there. In other words, his father was a tailor, you know, was a Schneider, a tailor. in the old country, in Poland. And what happened that during the Korban, the Holocaust, the enemy came and destroyed. It went up in flames. And that's his connection. He's connecting to this old Arab because through his father. It's almost as if this he is related in blood to this Arab who is keeping his father's métier alive. That's what's happening here. He says, when I finished, it was time for the closing of the gates. Very important in Hebrew, Kishesiyamti Hayita Sha'ani'ila. Now we all know, regardless, Reform, Orthodox, Modern Orthodox, Reconstruction, that the end of Yom Kippur is a service called Ni'ila. Ni'ila means gate. And symbolically, the end of the day of fasting, the gates come down, you have your last hour with the Great One to make amends with him and with anybody you want. And the time for him to go back to synagogue has come, and that is contemporaneous with the old Arab pulling down the gate. So beautiful here. He said, he too lowered the shutters and locked the gate, and I returned with all the worshippers home. What is so beautiful about this poem, to me, and it's so it resonates with me, as Yael will talk about, the poetess she'll talk about, is that he looks at the other. The man is the traditional enemy of the Israelis. And he goes out of his way to befriend him. And not only that, but he sees his father. He sees the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark. He takes his level of holiness on Yom Kippur to a very high level. And that's, to me, that's one of the themes of the poems that Yael will discuss.
And if I may add also, the year that he wrote the song and everything that happened right before, it is very bold of Amichai to write something like this, to speak about an Arab guy from a store and compare kind of, you see the resemblance between his father, who is a Holocaust survivor, to this Arab guy. And back then it is very bold to say something like this and to kind of create a bridge through his words. So it was back then very unique to read this words of the resemblance between an Arab that lives in the old city that was just captured by Israeli paratroopers and his own dad that came from Europe, from the Holocaust, who was a survivor.
In 1967.
Yes.
67, yeah.
Yeah.
And very important is that he is not forgetting. He is not forgetting the enmity that has existed for thousands of years going back to Old Testament between Esau, the tribe of Esau, Seir, and the old Hebrews. That this
well, it's unusual. The war just finished. That's what's unusual.
The war had just finished. And right. He ventures out into the Arab, right. The old Arab section, and makes peace. He's trying to make peace. The word Jerusalem comes from the word let there be peace. That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Thank you.
My father.
Your father.
My father. We were not in Jerusalem, but we were in Haifa. So on the eve, I believe it was, on the eve of the Jerusalem Day, that was in 48. The Arabs, all the Arabs left Haifa. And everybody rushed to the roofs to see them going on barges, on all kind of things. My father, who was a very devout Zionist, and he was fighting for the Kumat. He forbade everybody to go on the roof, and he said, "This is a day of sorrow for our neighbors, we will not celebrate. That's what I remember.
One other thing is that the Yom Yerushalayim falls on Kaf Chet, the 28th day of Iyar. And in Hebrew, again, the Kaf Chet is the word shachach, to forget. Lest we forget, you know, if I forget thee, Jerusalem, let my right hand forget itself and let my tongue cleave. Okay? And that's very much, it's not only symbolic, it actually happened on that Kaf Chet day.
This was of Yom HaAtzmaut.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Were you wanted to...
I didn't hear the last end of that sentence, what her father said as the people were leaving.
What she said, again.
We're not celebrating.
I heard that.
She said this is a day of sadness and mourning.
Thank you.
Oh, there was a kind of the dichotomy in him. He would celebrate with all his heart the day of independence, but he would remember that they would not celebrate. He would respect it. And that was something that...
Yeah, I was going to be speaking about poems that are both poignantly painful and deliciously sweet, and that's what we're talking about.
So we'll go to page 1 now, 1 and 2. 2 is the Hebrew. This song is written, Will There Ever Come Days, by Leah Goldberg, who was born in 1911, and she escaped from Germany to Russia in the First World War I. And her turning point, when she really started writing this song, is one example I'm going to explain, but was when soldiers in Russia tortured her dad back then, and that for her was a very big turning point. And then she decided to make Aliyah, and she came to Israel in 1935. She's been writing since a very young age, both in Russian and Hebrew languages, since the age of 12, if I'm
12, correct.
12. She never got married. She died in 1970, never had kids. And this song, Will They Ever Come Days, was written in 1943 as a response to the Second World War, when people in Israel already knew what was going on in Europe, and they had the information from the media. They kind of had the idea of what's happening in Germany and Poland. So. And the song talks about the feeling of guilt and the shame that people felt because they were lucky to either survive the Holocaust or to just be lucky enough to not be a part of it. People in Israel felt very guilty. And there were a lot of oral things happening, and that's how she will go through the song and see how she expressed it.
I want to just add one other thing, is that this woman was so brilliant. I mean, she went to the University of Berlin and then University of Bonn. She studied Semitic history, languages, history, pedagogy. She had the equivalent of 2 PhDs. She was the founder of the Department of Comparative Literature at the Hebrew University. A very, very brilliant woman. A philologist, knew languages, knew history. And this song is beautiful.
So she says, is it true, will there ever come days of forgiveness and mercy? And you'll walk in the field, and it will be an innocent walk. So we see she talks about something very simple, right? Just walking. And she asks, will we have like a simple, clean life without, that we can have forgiveness and mercy? And that's because people back then didn't feel any forgiveness and any mercy from Germany to Jews, and not just Jews, obviously. And she talks about something very basic, a basic will to just walk in a field, an innocent walk, something that we sometimes take for granted. And your feet on the clovers, small leaves, will be gently... Now, she talks, in Hebrew it says, Kaf raglech yelatef be'aleh aspeset. Your feet will be gently touching the leaves, which is, when we think about it, a nice, very nice feeling, right? Walking on the nature with your bare foot. And then she says, and sweet will be stings when you're stung by the rye's broken stalks. So she's talking about the sweet sting, which is an oxymoron, because a sting, you wouldn't think it's something sweet, right? It hurts, it hurts. So perhaps, you know, her life has some kind of a sting in it or a pain, but even despite the pain, or maybe she's overcoming this pain, and that's why there is some sweetness in it. And that's why there is hope. And we see when we go through the song that there is a little bit pieces of hope with all the horror and the bad experience that she's going through and people back then were going through, both in Israel and in diaspora. And then she says, and the drizzle will catch you in pounding raindrops, falling on your shoulders, your breast and your neck, while your mind will be clean. You will walk the wet fields. Again, something very simple, there is rain, and her mind is clean. The rain doesn't do anything bad for her, doesn't harm her. She's like, she accepting the rain, her mind is clean in a good way. But then she says, and the silence will fill you as does light in a dark cloud's dream. So again, when we think of a cloud, of a dark cloud, there is darkness in it. But she compares the silence that fills her as the cloud's dream, the light of a cloud's dream. In Hebrew she says, ויחב בך השקט כאור בשולי ענן. She takes the silence and the drops of water as a good thing, even though when we imagine the dark cloud is dark, there is darkness in it, but she really focuses at the end in this tiny piece of light, which gives her peace and rest.
The image that Eyal is describing, when there is an eclipse in the sun, for instance, there's an eclipse of the sun, and the sun is kind of obscured in most of the sun is obscured, but you have rays of light around the sun. So even though it's dark and it's, you know, it looks like you're going to have a tragedy here, you're losing your sun, yet the other hand, you've got this light, the rays of light protruding from this orb of the diminished sun. That's the beautiful image.
Thank you. I'll move on a little bit. She says, when we see, and the pond's golden mirror will show you the sun up above, and once more all the things will be simple and present and living. So she talks again about the simple things in life that we have, just like nature, that people maybe forget when reality is hard or is full with pain or sorrow. So she talks, this entire song really shows us the simple experiences of life, of living. And then she says, once more you will love. Yes, you will. Yes, once more you will love. And in Hebrew, the translation is a bit different. In Hebrew it says, ומותר בן לנגוע, ומותר לאהוב, ומותר ומותר לאהוב. מותר in Hebrew is allowed. It's allowed to touch, allowed to love. And she repeats it. She said twice, it's allowed to love. Even loving someone, which is you think is a part of living, you can do it. You don't have to feel guilty to love and to touch. And we see the senses here, and she talks about the pond and the sun, all the stuff that, you know, are just part of our life, right? The trees and the sun. She says, you're feel free to do so because you have no other choice. And then the last part of the song, you will walk all alone, never hurt by the blazing inferno of the fires on the roads, fed by horrors too awful to stand. This is the Holocaust. This is all the experiences and everything that people were struggling and going through, and what Israelis have heard in the media and the news and couldn't really do so much for the people. And in your heart of hearts, you'll be able to humbly surrender. In a very simple way, you accept the fact that you have to choose life in the way of the weeds, in the way of a free man. So you choose life. You keep your humanity with your in a humble way, and you accept the fact. She's actually asking us, the people who read the song, she expresses the basic right of us to live, to just live simple life. And in the way of free men, and in Hebrew it says, ke'echad ha'deshaim, ke'echad ha'adam, just like a human being, just like every man, Every woman, you choose life.
I'm particularly drawn by the concept of surrender, even though she doesn't use that word here. But in order to fully experience life in its fullest and connect to other people, it's implied here that she is trying to connect through love. She lived with her mother her whole life, okay? I'm giving you a bit of background, so I'm reading in a little bit. But what she's trying to say is that in order to have a relationship with another person, you've got to give up the wall around yourself. You've got to overcome it and just let life flow, let your feelings flow. And the emphasis, once more, she uses that term, once more, once more, once more. It's a feeling that once she had love, and once she may have had a lover. But like the Holocaust, it was tragic. It's happened to many people that I know of. My daughter has gone through many ups and down relationships, and when she leaves a man or a man leaves her, she is hurt, she is stung. I don't want any more. And she closes her heart off. And here, what she's trying to tell us is you got to open up, you got to go through it again.
Yes.
How many times do you have to go in order to get it right? And that's the beautiful message that Yael is explaining here. In your heart of hearts,
yes,
you got to get down there and get rid of all of the barriers that you put up. And in Amichai's poem, he uses the word heart a few times. He says, and in my heart, I feel so close to this man. He's my enemy. But my heart is telling me he's like me, flesh and blood. I gotta love him like I love myself.
And she knows, you know, there is a big contrast between a good optimistic future to a very dark, full of pain present. That's the song. And throughout the song, we see that there is some kind of a bad reality that she gives hope. If it's the sweet scene or the piece of light in the dark cloud, and the last part of the song, that's when, just like you said, you know, life, let life flow, right? This is it, Tamara.
This is a revelation to me, because I know Leah Goldberg as a poetess of children, a children poetess.
Children.
And she caught the essence of childhood, so sweet and so delightful. And I don't know that side of poetry.
Yeah.
Because we all remember all her ditties, all her little sweet songs.
Yes.
They are so delightful that we laugh.
That's why. And I agree, you know, when you imagine Leah Goldberg, if you know Leah Goldberg, you think of a lot of children's books. But that's what's special about this song. You see that even though it's a dark song, right? It talks about 1943 when the Holocaust was happening. Even, and that's where I take, you know, her optimistic view. V'timtak tkiratam. You never say in Hebrew, it's such a contrast. The sweet sting, tkira, is a bad, you know, tkira is stabbing or sting. Something very, you know, you think about blood when we say tkira, v'timtak, and it will be sweet. You know, it's very, so throughout the song, the same with the rain and with the piece of light, so I actually connect it. It's, for me, it is a song of hope. Of course, there were bad things.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I agree 100%.
Also, her biography, I couldn't imagine her not having the children.
I know.
Well, that's the point. She never married and she never had children. That's very significant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the reasons why she can express it the way she can.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. You
want to
add?
No, I think we've will there ever come days? You just got to keep the hope out there. Hatikvah. You got to keep it and you just keep growing. And it's a beautiful poem. Thank you.
Should we maybe play it or move on to
Rachel? Well, you wanted to do the Umnam. I should play Umnam. Yeah, we want you to hear a little bit. We're not going to play the whole thing because we don't want to keep you here. You're supposed to be out by 11.
No.
We started. No, it's okay. We want to play the song.
If you're having fun, if you all said no, it's good.
Yeah, Chava Alberstein is probably one of the most famous Israeli singers. And there are many versions of this song, but we chose her version. So you'll hear a little bit of it. About what she's trying to say, but what's running through here is that she finds peace. She is a woman that has found peace, even though she has suffered a lot. This woman has suffered, but she still can find her own private. There was a movie out a couple of years ago called The Private Garden, you know, that she has her own private space up here where she can retreat and really find peace in this Holocaust world. Okay.
Okay, so we'll move on to page 5. 6 is the Hebrew version.
Rachel is her name.
Yes, Rachel was born in 1890 and in Russia. She visited Israel in 1909 and then decided she wanted to be one of the founders of Israel and build the kibbutzes. She fell in love with the Kinneret, with the Sea of Galilee, moved to Israel He was one of the founders of Kibbutz Degania, which is
one of the original kibbutz in
Degania. And she actually died at the age of 40 in 1931 from the disease TB. Started writing in a very young age in Russia before she moved to Israel. And this is a short song that describes one moment, one random meeting that has a lot of impact on her.
I should mention one other thing. She never married. Mm-hmm. When she came to Israel, she fell under the spell of a Hannah Mazel. Maybe you know her. She, this woman created an institution where young women could learn agricultural techniques. So this Hannah Mazel inspired her so much that Rachel went back to France, to Toulouse, France, and she started studying her doctorate in agronomy. This is how, and then war broke out. So she could never complete that. So she returned to Odessa, Russia, and that's where she unfortunately contracted TB.
Went back to Israel and really finished. Her life ended in hospital in Israel by herself, and she was buried right next to the Kinneret.
And her poems are mandatory reading in the curriculum.
Yes,
in
Israel. High school. Back then, I didn't like it so much because, you know, you went through exams. My mom is actually a literature teacher, and she's known that it's not my favorite subject in high school because I felt like, you know, my imagination is not really working because you really have you hear specific things about the songs, and that's what you go through the exam. So for me, it was kind of a mandatory thing that I didn't enjoy back then, but today is a whole different thing.
What's the last name? What's the last name?
It's a long...
Bluestein.
Bluestein.
B-L-U-W-S-T-E-I-N.
Yes. She's known as Rachel.
Rachel, yes. That's why I left it Rachel, because that's her kind of... That's how we say it, Rachel. For Leah, I would say Leah Goldberg. Yehuda Michai, Rachel is only Rachel. Yes, it's very... Okay, so it goes, meeting, hardly meeting, one quick glance, fragments of obscure words. So we're talking about one meeting, apparently, hardly a meeting even, a very short moment, a few words, and again, waves of happiness and pain sweep over everything in rage. So this meeting, that maybe it's between her and someone, her loved one from before, someone from the past, she meets him again, and it seems like, and there is some kind of a metaphor between water to love, and again, waves of happiness and pain, they all come back, everything comes back to her, bring the feelings from the past and the love, but we can see she talks about happiness and pain, which to me, it seems like she's the way her attitude towards love is very sober and mature. She's not naive or romantic. She knows that it has pain, and in Hebrew it says dvai. Dvai is also sickness or sore, right? It's not only pain, which means she knows that love has both sides. And she says waves of in Hebrew, v'shuv etzif hakol, v'shuv hakol etzir, there is a storm starting, like in the sea, in the ocean, when there is a storm, everything becoming very strong. The dam of oblivion I had built in my defense is as if it had never been. So she built these walls that Richard was talking about. She built those walls to protect her feelings, to maybe not fall in love again. She had this field, this shield, but it just disappeared. It went away like it had never been. When she meets this guy again, just one, hardly a meeting, right? A few words, and everything she builds just, aya ke lo aya, has been, but not now it's gone. So she says, and that's when she accepts it, finally, I kneel on the shore of the roaring sea. Now, it says in Hebrew, agam so'en, which is a busy, noisy lake, not sea, actually. And it is an oxymoron, because when we think of a lake, you know, it's calm, it's peaceful, it's not roaring or noisy or very busy. Agam Soen, it's very, again, she's very ambivalent to this guy, because she loves him, but she built those walls, so she wants to be with him, and she doesn't want to be with him at the same time. And that's what we see in this song. So at the end of it, she kneel on the shore and drink my fill, which means she accepted it. In Hebrew, lishtok mimeno lirvaya. Lirvaya, she drinks, lirvaya means she drinks it all, and there is an exclamation mark, which means I'm happy with it. I accepted it, and it's like the thirst to water, she fulfilled her thirst to love. She kneels, she accepted it, and she drinks it. She give up of, you know, on her defenses, and she just, the end is drink my fill. That's when we realize she's back loving him. No more walls or, you know, defenses.
Any comments? Broken. His happiness is broken. One of the words that is not translated in English is the word die. We all know it from Dayenu that we say during the Seder. But, you know, it's like she's saying Zed die. It's not translated, unfortunately. She said, I've had enough. Enough. I don't want it anymore. And yet the waves, she can't forget. I mean, the dam of oblivion that she tried to erect to protect her ego against further hurt does not last. It's like the walls of Jerusalem. How many times has Jerusalem been rebuilt? And then, boom, another conqueror. Those walls will be broken down. We're very fortunate enough to have to share with you our fourth poet. This opened my eyes, really, quite frankly. I wasn't aware of this movement. It's called Ars Poetica. Ars Poetica is a term from the Latin. It means the art of poetry. Ovid wrote, who's a great poet, love poet, in the, let's say, the beginning of the first century. But in Hebrew, it's a derogatory term. They're using the word ars. In Hebrew, it's aris. Aris means pimp. Okay? We'll discuss what's happening here. I went to a Seder, I told, I'll share this with Liz and Frida. My brother invited me to a Seder. He's the cantor at the synagogue, conservative synagogue in Queens. And he had a lovely couple there. They didn't know each other. And they were at the Seder table, and there was a 93-year-old kinder transport surviving woman, very active in New York area. And this couple is conversing in Arabic almost the entire Seder. And at some point around the Hana, who is this Holocaust survivor, enough already, it's a Seder. You guys are supposed to be speaking in Hebrew. And this woke me up that what the Seder is all about and what our religion is all about, as was written beautifully, courtesy of Gail Terrell and her husband, that remember you are strangers in the land and you need to treat the strangers fairly. That here were two strangers meeting each other. His parents emigrated to Israel from Iraq. Her parents still live in Casablanca. She flew for Moroccan Airlines, and she's, you know, obviously looking to connect. And they connected at the Seder table, you know, using their native language. And how appropriate that was. To me, it was bringing the other, turning the acher, because these people, they were dark-skinned, of course, because she's Morocco, he's from Iraq, darker-skinned. But yet, they connected, and it was a beautiful Seder. Now, would you want to talk about this poetess?
Yes, so what's special about it, Adike Star, she's a young poet.
What page? Give them the page.
Page 11.
Page
right?
11.
Page 11 and 12, it's the long piece, and for the Hebrew it's page 13 and 14. So Adike Star is an Israeli poet that, which a few years ago, she realized she wanted to read her poems, and she... In Israel, you know, we have Mizrahi and Sephardi Jews and Ashkenazi Jews, those who came from Eastern Europe, and those who came, you know, I'm both. My last name is Solarsky, but my mom's side, her grandparents came from both Iran. My grandfather knows Persian, and my grandma, her parents came from Syria, so she knows Arabic. Her grandparents spoke Arabic, her parents spoke Arabic. I don't know much, but so we're very mixed society, and at the same time we have Arab Israelis. 20% of Israeli society is Arab. They are citizens. They live in many places, in mixed cities, not just mixed cities, villages. Haifa, Ramle, Jaffa, which is Jaffa, one of the cities that has a lot of Arab Israelis. And Adike Sar speaks about this Mizrahi Ashkenazi Arab Israelis entire conflict. So she says, my nephew Itai and I are walking around the clock square in Jaffa. More than 80 years separate us from Kulthum. Kulthum was an Egyptian singer years and years ago, which my grandma knows Kulthum, and she was very famous for in the entire Middle East. People from everywhere came to hear Kulthum. So both Jews who were in Syria, or Muslims in Syria, in Iran, and Iraq, and all those places in Egypt, they knew Kulthum. That was a common thing for them.
I went online to find out who this Kulthum was, and I was amazed that there were 10 million views on YouTube. 10 million. The Israeli singer, 700,000.
Yes.
8 million views. So she is tremendous.
Very famous.
Following.
Very successful back then, and then something that's in common for all of those who lived in the Middle East years and years ago, more than 80 years ago. So she says, more than 80 years separate us from Kulthum, who performed here on a stage, and I'm trying to discover if the applause got tangled in the cloth line. But where is Kulthum, and where are we? Which, like she says, it's very blunt, you know. It's very far away. It's not even relevant anymore. The thing we had in common, the love to Kulthum. And opposite us, there's a shoekeeper talking. And my nephew Itai asked in trepidation, Adi, is he an Arab? An Arab, I replied. In Jaffa, there are Arabs who live here. And are they good Arabs or bad Arabs? Look, this is a six-year-old kid. That's the first question that comes to his mind, right? He asks breathlessly, tightening his hand in mine. Fear presses his lips together. In every nation, there are good people and bad people, I reply. He huddles closer to me, unconvinced, and I realize that reassurance is needed here. Good, I add. And how do you know they are Arabs, he asks. He pursues his investigation, his eyes following a dove, trotting in front of the restaurant door. Now in Hebrew, a dove in Israel is a symbol to peace. The dove of peace that holds the olive branch, that also symbolizes peace. In Hebrew it says about the dove that it walks slowly. His eyes are following it on a dove that walks slowly in front of the restaurant. Now the dove is not flying. So just think, when the dove represents peace, the dove is not flying, is walking slowly. That's I think what she thought when she mentioned the dove is not flying. Ordinarily, he'd be chasing it and scaring it, the dove. Now it's part of a horror story. Of course I know, they are speaking Arabic. I reply in the confident tone of someone who knows the answer isn't quite right. With that antenna kids have, he senses his answers are self-confused, and his vigilance seeps into the sidewalk. Don't worry, they are like us, I extend him a lifeline. So sometimes people think we are Arabs and they are Jews. That's a very strong question. His words make flocks of birds fly through my body, ripping my blood vessels in the commotion. And I want to tell him about my grandmother, Shama, and my uncle Musa and uncle Daoud, all our Arabs' names, Arabic names. But at the age of 6, he already has grandmother Tiona, grandmother Yaffa, lots of uncles, and fear and war he received as a gift from the state.
No, he doesn't know that his grandparents were from another country, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, where the Jews adopted the names of the common culture. You know, there's not no such thing as, for instance, Shalom, or Reuven, or Levi. They adopted the names of the common.
They did in Europe, too.
In that country, yes. Mm-hmm.
But they all came from the same place, and she talks about her uncle Musa and Daoud, and,
right.
You know, those names, we all came from the Middle East, from places who spoke Arabic. And that's why, and that's really when he says, so sometimes people think we're Arabs and they're Jews. You know, I was traveling in Central America for a few months, and people used to think I'm from somewhere there. People used to ask me, are you from Syria? Are you from... And, you know, I don't know. I know maybe 3 words in Arabic, but that's very strong.
So why can't we make peace?
Exactly, yeah. And that's what the song talks about.
That's what it's about.
Why can't we make peace?
Yeah.
Exactly.
This group is a very dire minority, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I think what's implied here, of course, it has to start with the youth, the children, so that they feel comfortable that the other, you know, come on, we have a common heritage, you know? Because the skin is a little darker, they're in Jaffa.
Both sides are getting more alienated rather than the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
The older generations understood it better. Moshe Dayan's generation and so on actually grew up with them. I had a feeling for it.
People are really working from ground, from the people level, from the citizens. Not necessarily come from the government, but people in the streets, you know. It's getting better in terms of people want to live together and have coexistence. So there are many programs of, for example, teachers from elementary school,
yeah.
Jewish elementary school, go to Arab elementary school and Arab teacher.
That's very important.
So they can teach cultures,
yeah,
and they can really immerse the kids to be together,
yeah,
and live together. Some cities in Israel, you know, have more than 20-30% Arab speakers,
yeah,
in this city. So really, people start to understand that there is no way out of it. They're part of us, they're together, we live in the same country, so we have to, if it comes from us, it's something. It's not the best, but there are many book clubs and, you know, Kultum is the music, everything that we have in common, and
music.
We have a lot in common, people try to build from it.
You put it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Music, yeah.
May I ask a question?
Yes, Ralph.
Yes, I'm really very much encouraged by your presentation.
Thank you.
It's really moving towards the healing that we need. Uh-huh. And you talked about bringing down the walls. It seems to me that the walls that we build are really the walls that are within us.
Absolutely.
Right. My question to myself is, what is it that erects those walls within? External walls can be explained by all sorts of historical
yes.
conflicts. And the differences that you say are gradually being recognized in the streets, the language, melding. There's some assimilation going on. And it's been the story throughout history. And conflict because of external differences and perceived threat. But what is it that builds the wall within to start with? And I've often thought that the Hebrew imagination, which fascinates me, has in a way gone very deep into reflecting or speculating on what may be the problem. What is it? There seems to be a flaw very much in the very foundations of the human.
Of the human being,
you see. Absolutely not at all to downplay historical conflict and other things.
I feel
all
like we're scared.
Beg your pardon? And what
fear.
Is it? What is it
we
that
we
are afraid of?
You know, I'm 24. I remember days in high school and even before middle school, you know, we had the second intifada in 2000. And until today, growing up, you know, when my mom is telling me, when I'm 15 years old, I want to go and have pizza with my friend or ice cream in the mall. And my mom said, you're not going to the mall. Because there were terror attacks in malls. And 40 people were killed in one, you know, a fraction of a moment. Or, you know, to walk in the streets of Jerusalem knowing that 2 days before there was a stabbing in the exact place where I wait for the bus. Or, you know, I was in officer school 3-4 years ago in Israel, and throughout officer school we go through a training, also physical and mental, and we learn about Israel, so they take us to Jerusalem for a week. So a few months ago, I think around 4 months ago, there was a terror attack, and obviously this is one side, and I'm talking about my own personal experiences, but a few months ago there was a group of officers in training who were in the exact same brigade that I served in through officer school, standing on the exact same place where I stood right outside of Binyanei Ummah, which is a big place in Jerusalem, where they were going through their training. And a Palestinian, you know, person, terrorist, took his truck and just rammed over with his truck on this group of officers, killed 4 of them on the spot, 20, 19, and 18-year-old kids, I want to say kids, and injured 15 of them. And I stood there, I saw the footage, it was we stood on this U-shape in front of the commander, getting ready to go inside Binyanei Ummah. So we're scared. We grow up with this fear in our hearts, in our minds, that doesn't let us open up ourselves to people. Mm-hmm. And I went through middle school, through Seeds of Peace organization, and they still exist, those organizations are out there. But we need to remember that reality keeps bringing us with those conflicts. I went through to Greece with Palestinians, Jordanians, and Egyptian kids when I was 14 or 13. We were such a good friends. And I don't have a good ending to it, because throughout the year we got the Facebook of each other and email, but with all the wars and the operations that we had in Gaza, we had those bad interactions through emails, we just never kept in touch.
As a 20-year-old kid, I was given a trip to Europe. You know, my parents believed in all three boys doing the trip on our own. So I wind up in Israel, 20, and there's a group of French and German students in Israel seeing this beautiful country, that it is a flourishing country, that they're people, flesh and blood people, like I am. I made friends with a Pierre. His name was Pierre, redheaded guy, and we took a boat back from Israel to Brindisi, and then he said, Richard, I speak French, he says, tu dois venir à ma maison. Mais, Hadadir Tuashweef. He said to me, you're more than welcome to come, but you cannot say in front of my parents, both parents doctors, don't say you're Jewish, okay? I was the other. That's how ironic the situation is, that there are so many walls that people, and here's Pierre and I, we were buddies. We palled around together. And on the ship, we had good times. We spoke French. We all kinds of great, good times. And yet, there was this wall. I went to his parents' home, okay?
These poets are mentioning the walls because they are real. They're there for a reason. Should they be destroyed? Should they be? But they're there. The woman from Auschwitz at your Seder who said, who could not stand Arabic, she's not able to transpose herself into the Sephardim who spoke Arabic at that point. She relived her own story,
yes,
which is what these poets do too, and which we,
yes,
all do. Right. You're living with the fears, you know, it was just a natural thing for your
but
mother to
back
say.
To Ralph's point is right on, and that is that we, whether you're a 93-year-old kinder transport, or you're a 24-year-old, or you're a 21 in Israel, we erect our own walls. Everybody has his own wall. The bias that you grew up with, the bias.
Right.
Never ending.
Right.
Never ending. My parents took in, we grew up in a very affluent community in Westchester. And my dad was a wonderful heart. He was a heart. He took in as our house lady. We had a house lady. She was a woman of color. She was a reverend in her Seventh-day Adventist church. And she had the entire third floor of her home to herself. And then when she left us, my father gave her his Cadillac. Figure that out. She and my mom would argue religion. My mom being the daughter of a rabbi and speaking to this Adventist, they had a dialogue, a sicha. Yeah? So, I mean, the walls have to come down.
Peace?
They have to come down.
Why can't you have peace?
Well, that's
what's the problem? 50 years of it.
Because a strong minority controls. A strong minority controls. Yes. I know, finally.
You told me not to talk too much, so I don't talk too much. So I want to go back to the song. So
yes, which one?
No, the last one.
Okay,
I think it's up. So now
yes,
you shared, you know, experience why there are these prejudices against Arabs in the song, okay? And what I quote from this song that this IDK Sar has a hidden agenda. It means she idealized the, you know, the situation 80 years ago in Kikar Shaon, in a very specific place in Yer Jaffa.
Yeah, quite,
you know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, in 1946, you know, I was standing, we were living in the outskirts of Tel Aviv, just in the border of Jaffa, called a place Hassanbek. There was a mosque, until today is existing there. So anyway, I was standing and I saw far away at the end of the street, I saw as follows. Somebody is running and many after him, suddenly he's engulfed by them. Mm-hmm. And my mother, horrified mother, coming to me, take me back to the room, you know, and closing the door. So this was a murder of a Jew by Arabs, mm-hmm, there, okay?
And you
so
know,
this was the real situation in this time, not this ideal here that she tries to talk about, and she involves Umm Kulsum. Yes, Umm Kulsum in Israel decades ago was very popular. I can tell you, every Friday night, Friday evening before El Shabbat, so many Israelis were sitting in front of the only channel, the Israeli TV, and watching Egyptian movies every week. Shimon Peres was famous that he likes, mm-hmm, he likes this thing. And Umm Kulsum, this singer, was very popular and she was starring almost every 2 weeks with her singing in Arabic, which I personally dislike because it's like, you know, all the time, Ya Habibi, you know, again and again. It's monotonic, Arabic kind of music, but this is my personal taste. But anyway, this is important.
And you know, Kikar Shaon in Jaffa, there was a terror attack 2 months ago, a guy, actually an American tourist, I don't know if you guys remember, was stabbed right there in Suki Karashan.
That leads to insecurity, of course,
so
naturally.
You know, it's not over. Of course, this song talks about it. It's not over. In the same spot where you saw a guy, a Jew, that's being, you know, killed by an Arab, the same thing happened today, 60 years after.
Try to explain to the audience the last line of the song. Go.
From the state, Matana shekiblu ma'medina.
Explain.
It's there. She protests. Aditya Sar protests. Yeah, she says she wants peace, and
yeah,
she feels
but
like
blames,
this.
She blames the state.
She
blames
the
Israel,
state.
The
yes.
state, for this situation. This is a very left wing agenda, you know, to show.
What you're making again.
Yeah.
I do.
The walls.
I would love to say a little something. Because we are here removed from the conflict.
Of course.
And so naturally, we cannot come to any rash or obviously leftist solution to the problem there.
There's
right?
no solution.
Apart from that, no. we cannot come up with a proposal like that. We are here. But you highlighted a word in one of the poems, surrender. So it seems to me that for every one of us, there is an option to step out of the particularity of the historical, that is our situation, into something that is trans-historical. I don't want to say transcendent, because I'm not going to invoke God here. But what is it that surrendering ourselves and all that is at war within us
exactly.
to something else? Now, what is that? Surrender to what? I mean, I'm an agnostic. Let's assume I'm an agnostic. What is it? It's an invitation to move out of the particularities of our situation.
Out of your comfort zone.
Okay, I'll leave it
to be able to pass that
zone.
To be able to pass through that.
It's so easy for us to live in our own comfort zones.
Yeah.
And to move out, like, it takes a tremendous effort. Yeah. Tremendous.
You can't deny
these
it.
These ladies here, these two ladies, they couldn't get out and have a relationship, you know, with the opposite sex that would permanent.
Yeah.
It's obvious. They were burned out. You know, and they're writing about their frustration, their the wall that is within them.
But you can't blame them completely either. You have to be able to surrender to those emotions and thoughts, which are valid too.
It takes a lot of courage, tremendous courage to surrender.
Yeah.
You did a great job. You did a terrific
Thank
job.
You. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Let's have them back.
What's your name again?
Yael.
Thank you so much. I really
appreciate it. Yes. I work here, so.